Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Ailish Forfar, Justin Cuthbert for the next hour. We're going to chat with Charles Davis, an OG from our Fan Morning Show days. He's going to help us break down last night's surprising Super Bowl result. And then Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times helped tee up Luka and LeBron, who hit the court for the first time tonight, the start of a new era. And we've got that game on Sportsnet, Utah, and the Lakers, a 10:30 start, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1.
Yeah, I'm going to have to push the bedtime today because I'm interested to see the first steps in a Laker uniform for Luka Doncic. That will be very fun today. But it's going to be a fun couple of weeks here because the Four Nations is upon us, something completely new and exciting, and I'm very jacked up for it. And I'm even more excited because I saw Sidney Crosby practicing in Canadian colors today. So a massive exhale for Canadian hockey fans. For Crosby fans, probably for Crosby himself, Nova Scotians, everyone's probably pretty excited that Sid looks like he's going to be okay practicing in Montreal today.
Yeah, it feels real now. The Four Nations week upon us, games kicking off on Wednesday, Canada and Sweden. And of course, the big one, I think that we've all got circled, Canada-USA Saturday night at the Bell Center. But today was the first opportunity to see line rushes, practices, PP1, PP2 units, to see the new gear that the guys are working in before the game on Wednesday. And I got to say, like, my Canadian patriotism has spiked in the last seven hours.
That.
I'm ready to go. I mean, I knew that this week was going to be exciting, but I think when you start to picture, you know, Sidney Crosby on a line with Nathan MacKinnon and Mark Stone, and you see where Marner's slotting in, and you just see a bunch of faces that never have actually, A, either had a chance to represent Canada at the Olympic stage or the big world championship stage. There's just like that little, it's like a little kid feeling that I think a lot of them are feeling to put on the Canadian colors, the American colors, or Sweden and Finland, and get this tournament started.
Yeah, it's PP1 for me, though. I mean, come on. Cale Makar on the point, Connor McDavid on the flank, Sam Reinhart in the bumper position, MacKinnon playing, I guess, the Draisaitl role on the other flank, and Sidney Crosby doing those Sidney Crosby things down around the goal line. Like, that is just, I cannot wait for the first Canadian power play. I think it's going to be absolutely absurd watching these units go out. Same goes for the United States, who's going to have, we don't know the PP1, PP2 yet with them. But everyone's going to have, every country's going to have these unbelievable units that they can put together that we haven't been able to fully explore in this era of the NHL with McDavid and the like. But in the last 12 years, we haven't been able to see things like this come together. So it's very, very exciting. And again, that Crosby's a part of it just makes it like that much better.
Yeah, I didn't want to be like doom casting what this tournament would be like without Sidney Crosby, but the idea that he might not have played, or, you know, he's going to play Wednesday, so let's hope everything goes well and his health is there, but the fact that he's going to play Wednesday and we're going to see him wear that jersey and captain that team, like, it really feels like that is what we needed. Of course, a lot of excitement around the Canadian team and the American team going at it, but to see him get to be in that first game is gonna be huge.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. McDavid and Crosby playing together, one of the most important things I think the NHL can stage. I think this idea was born in many ways on the fact that, okay, you get Auston Matthews in a Team USA shirt, very, very important. But to go Sidney Crosby's entire career without pairing him with Connor McDavid in some way would have been a massive missed opportunity. So I do think a lot of this is built on these fantasy matchups that we're going to be able to be able to see very shortly here. And there's none more exciting than McDavid and Crosby playing on the same power play unit, on the same team, maybe some 5-on-5 shifts, who knows? But all of it's going to be very fun. And I think more important than fun, important for the NHL, going to have this moment where you get to see something completely different. You get the international competition started again, and it's the perfect tune-up for the Olympics next year.
Quinn Hughes will not play for Team USA, which you've probably heard by now, replaced by Sanderson. So a big blow for them, of course. Every team has had to actually deal with an injury replacement, but Quinn Hughes is probably one or two of the guys that you didn't want to have to miss. We still made our bet with Frank, who we'll hopefully have on this week, and we will still continue to honor it with or without a Quinn Hughes. Okay, we're going to talk a lot of hockey this week. Most of our guests will be helping tee up the Four Nations faceoff, as we've mentioned, starts on Wednesday. But you only really get one day after the Super Bowl to be reflectionists here on the Fan pregame. So we're going to look back a little bit.
Little fan postgame here.
Little fan post game, look back at the Super Bowl. Of course, I think most people were shocked by the result. I know the final score line might not really do it justice. The Chiefs got absolutely smoked, 40-22 by the Eagles. And I guess, like, you know, we're going to go into this with Charles in about 5 minutes, but I think maybe one thing that I look back on is I think I personally underestimated how important that Eagles D would be. I know they were number one, and we use that as a discussion point a lot about, oh, yeah, the Eagles are the number one. But, like, watching last night, it was outstanding. If you could have given that MVP award and split it into four pieces, it would have been amazing to see. Jalen Hurts also had an incredible game. But I think, underestimating that importance of that team. And when we look at next season, that's a team that is going to be just in the fight again and again and again. Like, they're young, they're gritty, they're hard to play against. And I think I underestimated that.
Yeah, they were awesome. Everything about the Philadelphia Eagles was awesome last night in Super Bowl 59. And, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs were inevitable until they weren't. And they weren't last night. And I wonder how much of a transfer of power we're going to see here, because you could see it with Kansas City. The talent is eroding around Patrick Mahomes. Offensive line could not hold up, as you mentioned. Travis Kelce looked old. The tools that are around Patrick Mahomes looked diminished. Patrick Mahomes himself looked a little bit diminished. That is a team that is dealing with a loss of talent year over year, whereas the Philadelphia Eagles, after winning a Super Bowl, seem poised to get everyone back.
Yeah.
That D-line you talked about.
And that D-line is amazing.
It's all young guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Josh Sweat's been around for a little while, but the D-line is almost exclusively young guys. The secondary, almost exclusively young guys, at least the guys that were making news yesterday. It just seems like Philly could keep this going for a while. And you see the state of the NFC. The Lions are going to suffer the cost of winning without winning. The Washington Commanders are on the come up, but they're not even close to measuring up the talent that the Philadelphia Eagles have. Saquon Barkley was their best player all year. He didn't even have to do anything in the game to win comfortably. I mean, Philly is set up for a serious run of success here, and maybe one that could extend longer than Kansas City's, I guess, if you look at it in this three-year window, because I think Philadelphia is set up to be the best team on paper for a couple years now. Whether that translates to Super Bowl victories, we shall see. But they've got one, and I don't see why they can't win more.
Yeah, I think you're totally right on that. And Saquon Barkley, we didn't even really mention him, wasn't the factor of last night's game. He was what I thought would be the factor, right? Okay, Saquon Barkley, this young guy, has such an incredible season. He's going to be the key factor. But they did that without even him having that explosive, incredible game that you had anticipated on his birthday, which, you know, influenced my betting decisions.
Shotgun a beer, though.
Yeah, he can shotgun a beer.
It was pick your poison, though.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, we schemed up a way to stop Saquon Barkley, and that was impressive, I suppose, but it took a lot of energy to accomplish that, and then Jalen Hurts just went out there and did exactly what he needed to do. Mm-hmm. Jalen Hurts was an absolute rock star in that game. I know you could split up the defensive line MVP, but I thought he was full value for the MVP. I thought he met every moment, basically the entire game, made one mistake, but it was basically a punt. Like, Jalen Hurts just, you know, he's a gamer, lived up to, you know, I don't know how big the expectations were for him, but he's exceeded all of them at this level. He looks like a guy you could win multiple Super Bowls.
We always talk about whose legacy changes the most after a Super Bowl or a championship or a Stanley Cup. And it might be both quarterbacks in different ways. Like, the Mahomes discussion all year long and all last couple years has been, is he going to be the new GOAT? Is he the Tom Brady? Can he compare? And Jalen Hurts, I don't know if he gets into that upper echelon of quarterback rankings when you do it. But I feel like both of them last night took steps in very different directions, right? And I don't know if it's just like the immediacy of trying to debate this one day afterwards. But I've seen a lot of people say, that's your GOAT. That's your GOAT, Patrick Mahomes. He's never going to be Tom Brady. Look what he did. He's 3-2 in the Super Bowl, and two of those losses were blowouts. And then you look at what Jalen Hurts has done. He's 1-1. Yeah. And both games, although they lost the previous one, he was amazing. So you look at the trajectories, and I don't know where you rank your quarterbacks, and we'll have time to do that all offseason, but I think Jalen Hurts took a huge step forward into the trust rankings or the upper echelon of quarterbacks.
I think, obviously, there's a lot of runway still here for Patrick Mahomes, but I think his future career prospects almost hinge on the next steps by the organization.
Yeah.
Because if they're just going to continue to squint and bear it and just try to get the next DeAndre Hopkins to come in and make two catches for 13 yards or whatever it was in the end, I don't think that's going to do it. They just got to start drafting well. They might have to take a step back to take multiple steps forward in order to, in some ways, mimic what Tom Brady's career was like when he had a dynasty early and a dynasty late. I think they have to take a step back, because if they continue to go on, you're just trying your best to put your best foot forward the next season, like at some point that runs out and they might have to take that step back. You know, Travis Kelce moves on, other guys move on, maybe coaches actually move on in order for Mahomes to have that next wave of success in his career. Because if I think they just keep trudging forward, it might get a little messy.
Do you think that's the end of Travis Kelce? Like, you know, those were rumors.
I think it should be. I mean, it didn't look like he had it. Yeah, I thought he was kind of the sports car they were saving in the garage all year long because he didn't have a good year.
That's what we predicted, too. Maybe he goes off when it matters here.
And he did play well. And that's the thing. Like, I thought Mahomes was kind of being reserved this entire time. You could probably count on one hand the amount of good games Patrick Mahomes had this season.
Yeah.
Like, they were basically stuck in neutral.
But when you win and such, when you win in one possession games or one score games, you give that a lot of credit, right? You're like, oh, well, they can win when it's close.
They know how to make the right play at the right time.
But then in the other side, and maybe this is like revisionist history, you're like, well, did he ever have a dominant game? Well, you're kind of seeing that last night. Like, he looked so out of sorts. It was stunning. Yeah. And I don't think a lot of people had the game plan. If I forget what the halftime score was, outrageous, right?
24-0.
And did you have that thought, you know, at halftime, okay, well, they'll come back. They've come back before. I tried to resist it because, you know, betting-wise, but I just didn't feel like they had it.
No, not really. It felt so deflating. It felt like the mistakes made were just so disgustingly backbreaking. I mean, the Zach Bond interception was just absolutely awful from a, okay, there's hope standpoint. There wasn't hope after that play was made.
Yeah. All right, let's break it all down with our old friend, Charles Davis, the NFL on CBS. Charles, we hope you've been well. We miss you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Trust you guys are.
We're hanging in there, you know, doing our best, staying regal, you know.
Good. That's what we like to hear.
We have lots to go through, obviously, from yesterday. Let's start with, I think, something that I was admitting just before you came on, that maybe I had underestimated how important the Eagles' D were, and we talked about X factors, and I think I just avoided that by, oh, Saquon Barkley is an X factor. But when you look at that game last night, and obviously Jalen Hurts getting the MVP, I feel like you could have split it up for a lot of Eagles in the end. Was that something that maybe we just underestimated how important it would be in the end?
I don't know that was the total underestimation. Probably, I'm just going to guess. I don't want to put words in your mouths, so let me know if I'm off, okay? Probably underestimated Kansas City having a left tackle who's really an all-pro guard and a left guard who's a backup. That's the underestimation. Mm-hmm. And they've gotten away with it for a few games now. But they've gotten away with it because on offense, they were able to stay in a position where they were getting to third down and having opportunities to pick up first downs. Last night, they weren't getting to third down with opportunities to pick up first downs. I remember at one point on our broadcast, we did the international broadcast, did it with Ian Eagle. The stat guy, our guy, Michael, held up a thing and said to me, 0-for-8 on third down, now 0-for-1 on fourth down after Avante Maddox knocked down a pass. And that just told me what was going on with that ball game. So that pressure that we saw from the Eagles front, immediately I was reminded of Kansas City, Tampa Bay in Tampa for the Super Bowl. It was the same type of a game. A defense that got after the quarterback because the offensive line couldn't hold up, never had a chance. I mean, he made plays in that game that no one will ever remember that came close to being successful that he never should have made. Talk about Patrick Mahomes. Wasn't the same last night. He didn't play at the same level by any stretch of the imagination. But he also was on his horse pretty early in this game as well. So they left Tampa knowing that they had to retool the offensive line. And that brought us to the draft of Creed Humphrey at center, Trey Smith at right guard, and bringing in Joe Tooney at left guard and a big free agent contract. They worked on the offensive tackles. It used to be Andrew Wiley. It was Donovan Smith for a while. Now they've got to figure out a left tackle in a big way because Joe Tooney's not going to survive out there for a full-time season. He's a great player. He gave it his best, but he was overwhelmed yesterday because They didn't run the ball. The first 15 plays of the game, one run. Okay, so they must have felt like they couldn't run it. And then once you get that, and now here comes Josh Sweat, who, by the way, is playing for a contract on the biggest stage of we could have, and he earned a big one last night. And here comes Brandon Graham off of IR. Here comes Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, Moro Ojomo, Jalix Hunt, Milton Williams. It's reminiscent of Jim Schwartz and how he did things. Front four, go get the quarterback. Everyone else play coverage. Vic Fangio, the defense coordinator for the Eagles now, essentially the same thing. And they get after him. So I don't think you underestimate the Eagles' defense as much as maybe we didn't give enough credence to, boy, will Kansas City struggle if they can't stay in manageable situations? Because right now, if you're Buffalo, that's what you're looking at going, mm-hmm. We didn't go get him like that. Mm-hmm. But you also were not in position to go get him because Kansas City stayed on schedule for most of the game, ran the ball better than you expected, and stayed in third and shorter situations.
In some ways, just the recent draft history can tell the story of the Super Bowl, because you look through the list last 5 years, Kansas City, there's not much there that at least had an impact in the game. And then it's just littered on the Eagles side with contributors, guys who were instrumental in the pass rush, instrumental in the secondary, instrumental in just about every facet. And it leads all that success from Howie Roseman to a coronation for the Eagles. I wonder for you, Charles, does perception change for you for any key individual with Philly? I mean, there was a lot of Hurts detractors, and he's been brilliant now in two Super Bowls. Sirianni has caught heat. Fangio has had all this failure in big moments. Is there a redemption story that sticks out for you on the Philly side?
Probably, if I'm going to call it redemption, be Sirianni, because we had, you know, him screaming at the fans after they got beat by Cleveland. Think about that, folks. They got beat by Cleveland this year. And they were 2-2 going into the open week. And people were wondering, is Sirianni, does he have the temperament to be a head coach? Can he run the distance on? I read an article a month ago where a, you know, undisclosed general manager said, can the head coach handle the rest of the season without imploding? Okay, so that reputation obviously was out there and throughout the league, and he handled it in a great way. He was terrific during the playoffs and Super Bowl 2 weeks and during the game and the whole deal. So I think there's been some maturation on his part. I think that the Eagles team responds to him better than maybe the public might respond to him. And I think the roots of everything go back to that open week when Lane Johnson, Jordan Mailata, and Landon Dickerson walked into Sirianni's office and said, look, we're 2-2. We are massive up front, and this is what we do best, which is move people, and we're not running the ball enough. Jalen, I mean, you can go back and look at the numbers somewhere in the neighborhood of they were throwing it 30-plus times in those two, you know, when they were 2-2, and those numbers dropped to the low 20s the rest of the season, and things picked up for Barkley. They're like, we've got this guy that we need to use. And Nick Sirianni listened to them and talked to Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator. And instead of worrying about their reputations, because you're not considered brilliant as a coordinator on offense unless you're flinging it around. Okay, forget that. You know what's brilliant is that this guy, 26, is beating people up running it, and that helps our quarterback. And their quarterback played at a level last night. He was nearly flawless. One bad throw, didn't step into it and short-armed it when Nick Bolton was staring him down the face. But the rest of the ball game, I thought his feel for the game was off the charts. He could feel pressure and he would go when he had to. He would sidestep and make a throw. I think for the most part, the offensive line pass protected better than it has for much of the season as well. And he had time to go through progression 1, 2, 3, find the right guy. And when he did find the right guy, he's very sharp throwing the football. He was excellent in the ball game, but I really think it all starts with that offensive line, those big guys up front. And by the way, I don't think any of them are going anywhere. Mm-hmm. I think they're all set to come back.
Yeah, it's we were just talking about it before we brought you on. It looks like this could be a nice run for Philly just in terms of having those young guys sticking with the team and keeping their window open. But everything you just used to explain Jalen Hurts, I feel very opposite in how Patrick Mahomes performed. He didn't have that composure. He didn't have the game that we probably had anticipated coming into it. So this gives you the opportunity to kind of look at his Super Bowl package. It's 2-3 now, and the two losses were not great losses. They were more of blowouts. So a lot of people won't always have that conversation with Mahomes about the GOAT and Tom Brady. Like, just taking that aside, like, how do you evaluate Patrick Mahomes and his performance in now 5 Super Bowls, 2 losses, 3 wins, and where this team might be going from now on?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at him overall in the playoffs, you realize he's 17-4. Okay, so before everybody starts, oh my God, he's this and he's that, they're 17-4. All right. The losses have been 2 of them to Tom Brady, this one to Jalen Hurts, and 1 to Joe Burrow. Okay. So let's, you know, to me, I'm like pumping the brakes on, you know, because it goes in such swings. Oh, yeah. Is he the GOAT? Okay. That's probably too much too early. Oh, he's miserable. No, that's stupid. Okay. Because he's not. The difference between this one and the Tampa Super Bowl was the Tampa Super Bowl, he was heroic in his play because he was on his horse the entire game. He was rushed like you would not believe and still almost made plays and had to retool the offensive line. In this game, there's no way I'm going to say that he played anywhere to that level. He was not good in this game. I mean, for me to say that otherwise would be folly. There were passes, like the first 2 passes to Travis Kelce, one was behind him and the other was at his feet. He can't catch those, okay? That wasn't all pass rush. Those were just bad throws by Patrick Mahomes. The second interception of Zach Bond, none of us are going to make a good throw on that play if we have 300 and something pounds of Joe Tooney hitting us at the same time we're throwing the football. Could go back and watch the tape. Josh Sweat walked his offensive tackle right back into him and threw him into him at the point he's throwing the football. Your accuracy is not going to be good. I don't care who you are. Oh, by the way, Tom Brady's not going to be accurate throwing that football. All right. So let's just call it as it is. And watch everything that we see and see it clearly. Was he good last night? No, he was not. He missed many throws he should have made. He's the first one to say, I put us in really bad position, those interceptions. The interception of Cooper DeJean, he got locked in on the crossing route, and DeJean was in short coverage and had no one in his area and did what great defensive backs do. Okay, I've got no coverage. I'm watching the quarterback. Where's the ball going? Went to it and made a sensational play. That's on Patrick Mahomes. Absolutely. He did not play to the level he should have played. First one, look, I thought he was heroic in that game because it was just under such pressure. And this one, I would not use that word at all. I thought he just was not a good – he was not a good quarterback in that game, and that was part of the reason Kansas City lost. But they're going to go after this one the same way they left Tampa. We got to fix our offensive line. We absolutely do. If we want to get the greatness that we do have back there, we have to fix it. And I do think they've got to make a real look at their wide receiving core as well.
Do they need to go through some transition, some turnover in order to get back there? Like, would a step back to take multiple steps forward for the Kansas City Chiefs make sense? Or do you think they can just kind of patch it up, make some quality additions, and be right back there?
I don't think they have to go through a transition and have to take a step back. They just have to do what they did last time. You remember the Tampa game when they retooled the offensive line?
Mm-hmm. Have they that's missed, enough, though?
Have they missed winning the division since then? Mm-hmm. No. They fixed it, and they went on. You know what else got better? The defense got better. Mm-hmm. They've got to continue to add to those things. They'll go into next year where everyone is still chasing them in the AFC side, especially in the division. But they won't go in with a sense of invincibility. I think that the Los Angeles Chargers watched that game last night and thought, boy, we're right there. I think the Denver Broncos watched that game and said, oh, we're right there. You know, who's the best in the Baltimore Ravens? You think the Ravens are quaking in their boots right now? I don't think so. They're licking their chops. You think Buffalo doesn't want another shot? They absolutely do. All these teams that have been really close but haven't gotten over, they think next year is the year to get over. And I don't blame them. I think that they're right for that. But I don't think it's a massive rebuild. It's just you've got to hit the right buttons with the right people. And by the way, Philadelphia, Howie Roseman, their GM, go back and look at what they did in the last year, free agency and draft. And you tell me a GM that's had a better year.
Perfection.
than Howie Roseman had in
across
the last
all of sports. Year. I don't know if there's a better. I mean,
pick it. What they did in transforming and doing with that team, because obviously Saquon was the biggest one. Mm-hmm. But in the first round, you get Quinyon Mitchell. In the second round, you get a first-round pick in Cooper DeJean. Both of them play at an exceedingly high level. They're both up for Defensive Rookie of the Year. You know, I mean, just I can just go on and on. Oh, by the way, Mekhi Becton's supposed to be a total bust as a left tackle with the Jets. They move him to guard in camp just to take a look. And all of a sudden, he's a starting guard there for them and played pretty well. I mean, you name it, they nailed it. But that's not an unusual thing for Howie Roseman. He does an excellent job year in and year out putting together a roster. Brett Veach does a pretty good job overall, too. I mean, I wouldn't say everything's been a total bust there. The reason the offensive line's struggling now is they had injury after injury after injury and one miss, Kingsley Suamataia. They thought he would be the answer, the second-round pick, and he wasn't. DJ Humphries was brought in, got hurt. Wanya Morris
is a miss, too.
Yep, he couldn't play. Well, he'd be better on the right side than the left. All right, I'm not saying he's going to ever be an all-pro, but he's miscast as a left tackle. Can't play it. And Tooney having to play out there, he battled. But in those situations, he can't hold up against really good talent there. Move him inside to guard, he's all-pro.
Charles, it's always a pleasure getting to pick your brain up against the clock, so we got to let you go. But be well. Be good. Do good. God bless. Go Bills. I thought you'd like that one.
Yeah, there you go. You guys take care of yourselves. Continued success to you. Yeah,
thanks so much, Charles. Appreciate it. Charles Davis, NFL and CBS, joining us, breaking down the game. A quick turnaround for him, so appreciate the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's on the call last night. Boom.
Back home with the Vols helmet in the background.
So probably a little overwhelming, but we do appreciate all that. And I think you're right. You were going to bring up the Howie Roseman masterclass, and he did. So that helped.
Perfection. probably, I don't know if they're going to write a book about it, but like, there's a lot of GMs that we've had in this. You know, mm-hmm. Kyle Dubas is reading about everybody on sports and all this stuff. I think if he taught a masterclass in sports executive dumb, if that makes any sense, it would do quite well because this is as good as you could possibly do putting a roster together with the Eagles.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we're going to do best bets, our Betano best bets, which we are going to look at the Four Nations face-off. We got lots of good things to go through. Thanks to Betano, they helped us out, got us set up for some extra betting. We're excited for it. Four Nations is just around the corner. And then Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times is going to join us. As we mentioned, we've got a big game tonight. It's Utah and the Lakers, 10:30 p.m. It is the debut of Luka Doncic, and we're going to go through that. Him and LeBron on the court together tonight. So we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with all that.
Get smarter when you listen to Hockey Talk, the Hockey PDOcast with Dmitry Filipovich. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're going to talk to Dan Wojcicki in about 7 minutes. For then, we're going to...
Very precise.
Well, just so people can set their timer. 7 minutes is probably just the perfect time to hard-boil an egg.
I don't like a hard-boiled egg.
Okay, well, if you're ready, you can start it right now. Dan Wojcicki will be on when it's time.
Dinner's up.
Okay, time now for Best Bets brought to you by Betano. We mentioned it. The Four Nations face-off begins this week. Wednesday kicks things off with Canada and Sweden. We saw our line combinations today from practices. We saw some power play units, which got us excited, obviously, beyond belief that it's happening. Best on best just a couple days away. So Betano, you can bet tournament winner, top goal scorer, top point scorer for the whole tournament, but also for each individual team. We've perused the offerings and come up with a few different best bets.
Yeah, generally I like a little precedent to work with in a tournament.
It's hard, there's not
some historical implications, but you can't get that with the Four Nations face-off, of course, this being the inaugural one. But once I saw those power play units, I was ready to fire. I think Sam Reinhart's in a brilliant position to have a great tournament, playing on the top line with Connor McDavid and Mitch Marner, at least that's how it lines up. And then, of course, the top power play where I think he'll be in the slot. John Cooper talking about how the first line has got some finishing ability. Well, you know, McDavid can score goals. Mitch Marner, not so much. Sam Reinhart's the goal scorer on that unit. So Reinhart, top goal scorer just overall is 10-1. I'm going to play that. I think he could have a massive tournament. And I'll do one more Canada and then we can go to yours. Makar, top point scorer just in the entire tournament as well, is 24-1. We know he's going to play some power play minutes, most of the power play minutes. They're probably going to get him in some five-man units looking to attack with Cale Makar on the ice. So I think he can secondary assist himself to glory here. I think 24-1 on a guy like Makar. He could potentially outpace McDavid and at a long number. I like Makar.
Okay, you mentioned that there's not a lot of precedent like coming into this about any historical implications. Well, I kind of disagree because I am going full Sidney Crosby, Captain Canada, hero moment.
Not worried about the wrist, the arm, the shoulder, whatever it was.
I know that that guy's got more heart than most people combined. And I think if he's going to be playing for this team and captaining this team at this amazing opportunity to be best on best, he's going to give it all he's got. So I've got two Crosby plays. I like your top scorer as well. So, sorry, but I'm going to go with top point scorer. So Canada, for him to be the top point scorer on Canada is 9-1. But for the whole tournament is 34-1. And you mentioned it. He's on a great top power play unit. He's playing with, you know, these lines are also just Monday's opportunity, but we're
playing with Nathan McKinnon based on
playing with Nathan McKinnon and Mark Stone, and he's going to be over the boards in all the important situations. He is the guy that gets it done. So I think I like him to be able to contribute and be the international star at the international stage that he has been basically his entire time he's ever put that jersey on. I can just picture him scoring big goals, setting up big plays. That's Sidney Crosby. And finally, I'll just give you one. Canada win the tournament. They're the favorites. They're plus 140, but feeling very patriotic, so we're going all Canada here.
There you go. I can't blame you with that one. The U.S., by the way, is plus 150. So we got two clear favorites. Mm-hmm. If you're confident either way, you can get some plus money on the winner. We don't have the full extent of how the USA will attack this tournament, but we do know that Jake Guentzel is expected to play on a line with Austin Matthews and Jack Hughes,
not
who
bad.
Are two really, really good offensive players. So I think Jake Guentzel can kind of soak up some of that while also offer some power play contribution if given that opportunity. And just as someone who could kind of hide in the shadows and just outpace everyone, Jake Guentzel, top USA point scorer, is another bet for me at 10-1.
Okay. I love all of these and excited to play them this week. Shout out to Betano for getting us hooked up. You guys are the best, and that was Best Bets, brought to you by Betano. Tap into Betano today. Okay, so Four Nations Faceoff is going to really take over our dialogue for the next couple of days, but what a treat we've got. Utah and the Lakers tonight. That's Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1. This is going to be a big one. It's Luka's debut at home, debut in general, but it's also at home, which just makes it even better. Lakers are fifth in the West now. They're on a five-game winning streak. They're 31-19. Utah, on the other hand, not good. Utah, 12-39, third worst record in the entire NBA. However, we talked post-trade deadline about some of the ads that the Lakers did, including Mark Williams. But the trade was rescinded, which is very interesting and usually a big talking piece, like, for a secondary trade. But this one had a lot of importance to, like, kind of the direction that the Lakers were going. And now their trade's rescinded. And, I mean, first of all, awkward if you're Dalton Connect having to come back to your team that traded you away.
Yeah.
But it's going to make a little bit of an impact for sure this season.
Yeah, I'm no Mark Williams expert. Didn't watch a lot of Hornets basketball since he was drafted out of Duke. But we knew Luka Doncic informed this decision that the Lakers were dealing with a problem in terms of their bigs after giving up the big in the deal, that being Anthony Davis. So this was a move that, despite some unknowns, was going to give them some immediate title aspirations at the very least. But now they kind of enter the playoffs, if they make it, with a short hand because they don't have positional optimization. But I don't think that's that big of a deal. I think it would have been a bit of a stretch to be like, okay, Mark Williams, we have a title contender. Like that probably
it was,
is.
It was like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. That's a saying, right?
Or Band-Aid on a bullet wound. I don't know if
that's a saying.
That's the first time I've heard it.
Did I make a saying?
But yeah, no, it would give them potential. Like, I think they were a little hopeful in that he could be that guy maybe in the long term, more times than not than the short term. However, they just needed someone in that position. They don't have it with Jackson Hayes. But I don't think it really matters because I do think it was a bit of a stretch. But really, the Luka thing is about the future. The Luka thing is about transitioning from LeBron James, his era, to the Luka Doncic era that will dominate the next 10 years for the LA Lakers. So this is going to be a celebration tonight. You mentioned Utah. We're not excited about the competitive aspect of this game. We're excited to see Luka Doncic and LeBron James overlap for the very first time. And I think there's going to be some juice that carries them in a playoff series. I think they could win one, potentially. But I think this is about the future, setting up for the future. And maybe the Mark Williams move wasn't the move. They could keep their powder dry for a little bit and make sure they make the right steps around Luka Doncic. So I don't know if it's a massive, massive blow, but it does hurt their ability to win this year.
I think tonight is going to be interesting for a lot of reasons. Not that people were criticizing getting Luka Doncic. Like, that's not a real thing. But curious about how he plays with LeBron James. They're not a seamless, perfect fit right away. I think it's going to be an interesting way that they kind of feel this out. This is the first opportunity for them to play together. You know, J.J. Redick has the experience as a teammate of Luka's, so it might help with some of the growing pains. I don't anticipate to see that against Utah. Tonight's a perfect, like, soft landing spot. You can just get these guys out there, and you can run up the score. Like, the spread, I think, was 20 last time I looked. Like, it can just be all offense. But I think there's a lot of learning to be done, and that really starts tonight.
I think it's a fascinating position for both these players, because for the first time, Luka has someone who's more important than him on his team. But for the first time, LeBron has had someone where it's like, oh, that's the future of the team. I'm no longer the most important player in this franchise, which is, for both of them, a juxtaposition compared to what they have been grown accustomed to. And I'm fascinated to see how it looks.
10:30 p.m. tonight on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1. Okay, to tee it up with us, Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times joins us. Dan, we appreciate you jumping on. Exciting era kicking off tonight. The anticipation, the excitement of Luka and LeBron. There must be a lot of buzz around that game tonight and around, I guess, LA in general.
I'll tell you, I felt buzzed because I feel like you'd have to be drunk to, like, think that this was even possible 2 weeks ago. It, it's really, really strange and exciting strange, right? Like, there's been a lot going on with this Lakers team this year in terms of just, like, really, really big wild swings. A team, you know, that started this year by hiring J.J. Redick as his head coach, you know, by the way, after it flirted with Danny Hurley. You know, like, this team has had some other crazy stuff happen along the way. Like, it's, you know, I mean, the coach's house burned down this season. But that's the thing that happened with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And still, you know, trading Anthony Davis minutes after your best win of the year in New York, in some ways, for Luka freaking Doncic, like, it's unbelievable. I think you guys kind of put it the right way. On one hand, you've got a player, you said that about, like, that Luka's never played to be more important than him. I kind of want to flip that on his head. I LeBron has never played with somebody more important than him. Mm-hmm. This is the first time in LeBron James's basketball career where a team has looked at its roster and it's made a decision not solely based on LeBron James. And, you know, I think in this case, what's even wilder is that this trade might even give LeBron a better chance to win now, but it certainly also sets the Lakers up. It'll set the Lakers up for, like, the next decade if it goes right. And that does feel like tonight is, like, a pivotal moment in that, right? Like, it is the start of something new in the Lakers, while also at the same time, like the present's pretty good too.
Yeah, for both of them, it's like, oh, there's another alpha dog here for both these guys who have never really been in that position, which makes it a fascinating situation. And you mentioned, like, it's a better situation for LeBron. There is a prospect in this late chapter potentially get a ring on the back of Luka Doncic. And I think the same goes for Luka. If they can actually get on the same page here, I think it's might be the best thing for both of them. But how do you expect it to look? Like, it's easier said than done, and many things in life easier said than done. But when these two are on the floor together, do you expect it to be instant chemistry, some magic, or do you expect there to be, like, a long learning curve here as these two try to figure out how to play basketball together?
Is it a cop-out if I say yes to that question? I think certainly expect there to be some growing pains, right? Like, this is going to be a pretty sizable stylistic change for these teams, for these players. I'm sorry. I think, though, one of the things that will help and aid in this, and Steve Kerr said something the other day about how, like, great players just sort of make it work. One of the things on this that I think is interesting is that, like, these are pretty unselfish players who actually are kind of cut from the same cloth in some ways, right? Like, they both love to pass the basketball. They're both kind of oversized, can create mismatches. You know, guys that seemingly, like, value, like, quote unquote, playing the right way. And in that way, it does sort of seem like, at least spiritually, like, it's basically like they'll be always able to have LeBron James or always able to have Luka Doncic on the court at all times in one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is, like, the tremendous, like, of all the things, like, basketball-wise, that this is going to do for the Lakers, like, the ability to always have one of those guys on the court. And then also, in really important moments, have, you know, if you're a defense, like, man, you're going to have to concentrate on those two guys so much. And then not to mention, by the way, the player who just scored 45 points for you on Saturday in Austin Reeves, pretty good offensive player, now all of a sudden gets guarded by the third best defender. You know, instead of some nights he was getting guarded by the best perimeter defender. Mm-hmm. Like, they're gonna score the basketball. Defensively, we'll see. Offensively, if this goes even sort of good, they're going to be pretty incredible.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch. Regardless, I mean, who doesn't love a high scoring game? I wonder about just like over this last, I guess it's been a week. It feels crazy that this even happened. What we've learned about Luka's intentions to sign long term, to be really locked in here, because there's still, I don't even know if it's a 1% chance that this doesn't work out or that he doesn't stay, but it feels like they're really embracing. I know I saw the Lakers are giving everybody a Luka Doncic t-shirt tonight at the game. Like, it feels like this is happening for more than one season. Like, he can be that new guy that takes the torch from LeBron when LeBron eventually does retire. Is that the feeling in LA?
I mean, I think so, right? Look, you never know what's going to happen. Like, the fact that this is like all on the table is sort of born out of total chaos anyways, right? So you don't want to make any like wild predictions about like, you know, what's going to happen with these guys in a year or 2 years or any of that stuff. That being said, I mean, Luka Doncic donated, you know, $500,000 today to Los Angeles, to wildfire relief. Like, that happened this morning. And in there, you know, talked about being a neighbor to the city for years to come. Look, it's such a good situation for all parties. It would seem like that is the path that everyone is walking down. Who knows? The Lakers, I think, have certainly signaled their intentions to Luka Doncic. And the fact that they, you know, again, speaking of being buzzed, made a pretty wild, in hindsight, a pretty wild trade to try to satiate his desires for a backup big. So, but yeah, I think that is that, you know, and Mark Williams, and obviously that didn't work out, but like, that's a signal, like, we will do what you want, right? Like, and that is what the Lakers do. They get stars and then they hand the franchise to them. This is what they've been doing, you know, really since 1980. And I don't anticipate that to change.
Okay, I got to ask about LeBron James in that sense then. Like, is this going to hurt his ego at all? That, you know, I'm seeing photos of crypto.com with 77 jerseys given out to every fan. You know, he gets to call the shot on the last bit of futures capital available to trade, even though it comes back because the Mark Williams deal didn't go down. Will LeBron care at all that it seems like, you know, his sway is not like diminished, but mildly diminished?
No, it's diminished. It's diminished. 100% it's diminished. And I think that's a really interesting question that we don't know the answer to yet, right? Because it is such uncharted territory. I think with LeBron, with a lot of things, like, winning is like the best elixir for this stuff. And they should win. Like, this should, if this plays the way that it should play over the next year and a half, we'll say, right? Like, the decisions the Lakers are going to make based around Luka Doncic, by and large, are going to be decisions made to win. And LeBron James generally is in favor of those types of decisions, right? Like, this is like, that is sort of his mentality. It's sort of what he's wanted for the last few years with this organization, is he's wanted them to be aggressive in these things because he knows his time is limited, doesn't really care about the future in that way. Well, like, the Lakers have somehow threaded this really tight needle where they figured out a way to like to give themselves a future while also maximizing LeBron James's presence and that to me, I think, is ultimately why like I'm not too worried about that stuff and that bit of psychological sort of shift for him. But it's weird and it's different. It is undoubtedly different. Right. Like I was saying earlier, you know, it's hard to think of the last time LeBron James was on a basketball team where all decisions weren't made with sort of his betterment in mind.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, maybe when he was 12 or 13, like it's been a long
time. Might have
to go
farther than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think right now, right. Like, I mean, the Lakers were playing really good basketball before this trade, and they've been playing really good basketball. I mean, You know, they've won, I think, 11 to 13 games, and, you know, Luka Doncic hasn't been on the court yet, you know? And I think that that is the biggest thing. That's like the biggest thing I see is, like, you know, they still risked how they were playing now for what they could be the next 10 years, right? They still, like, that is the gamble for the Lakers on this. And I think they're in a really good position. They're in a really good position right now to kind of have that work out for them and have that be like a pretty seamless gap where they don't have to go through the type of painful rebuild that they went through post Kobe. Like that's the insane part of all of this. Like, I was talking with someone from Dallas today. I use the word absurd. It's an absurd bit of good luck for the Lakers organization that they do not have to enter the back half of this decade hoping that they get lottery luck, hoping that, you know, they have cap space or they're set up for the right free agency where they can kind of cut the line again. Like, they cut it. Like, they've got their guy. And it's not LeBron.
Yeah, it was pretty unbelievable to see, like, the run of Lakers that have have ended up in their lap at times, and Luka being the next of the best here. We appreciate your time tonight, Dan. I know it's going to be a busy stretch, a busy bunch of games, so enjoy it, and we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times ahead of Luka and LeBron. Well, maybe it's just Luka's night because it's a whole run of promo tonight. Every single fan in attendance gets a Luka Doncic 77 Lakers t-shirt laid out all over.
Looks nice.
It looks gorgeous in the stadium. Today you mentioned, and Dan just touched on it too, he donated $500,000 to the LA Fire Relief for in learning what has gone on in LA since he's been there. Like, it's pretty hard, not 0%, but pretty hard to imagine him just being there this season, right?
Oh, yeah. This was the, as I said, get out of jail free card in many ways for the Lakers organization. And I think LeBron is the key variable in it all working seamlessly, because ultimately it doesn't really matter LeBron anymore in so many ways, because the future is taken care of. But if LeBron James approaches this the right way, it's the best thing for him, too. Yeah. It's absolutely the best thing for him, too, because he wasn't going to win another title with him running the show, with him making every decision, with him having to be the guy with Anthony Davis and whatever you can get us, whatever guy I used to play with can come back and we can try to push as far as we can. Like, they hit a wall every single time. They simply weren't good enough. And now with Luka Doncic in his prime, maybe still approaching his prime, if he can take that on that secondary role and be a brilliant number two, then he can win another title.
Yeah.
And how does that change the conversation around him? I guess it's different being the alpha for title winning teams, I suppose. But at the end of the day, if he adds another title to the ledger, it helps every discussion that happens after his post-playing career.
Sometimes being a good leader is knowing when it's time to, like, step back a little bit, let somebody else cook, and we will find that out.
No coincidence, though, that it probably had to have been done without him.
Oh, I think that's not a coincidence at all.
Sometimes.
Like, I don't know if he would have said no to it, but it might have been pushed back. It might have been discussion about, oh, is that the right fit? Like, okay, what's, you know, it's just, that's why you shouldn't consult with all your players on every trade. Like, unless you're the GM.
As the Mavs prepared to make a terrible move themselves, the only thing that could have been worse was the Lakers being like, well LeBron, we want to make sure LeBron is happy in his final years here with the Lakers. That would have been.
He might be happier in the end that he wasn't consulted. Even though it might have been a slight to him.
Him playing GM, not as good as him playing the other five positions on a basketball floor.
So we've got that game, Utah and the Lakers, a 10:30 start on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1. Before that, a doubleheader. We've got Boston and Miami, a 7:30, another big game. That's across the network. On Sportsnet Plus, Atlanta and Orlando, 7 p.m., but New Orleans and OKC at 8. And as we mentioned this week, Four Nations Face-Off kicking off on Wednesday. It'll be great. It'll be Canada, Sweden. Those games are 8 p.m., so we got more time to get home, eat, get your feet up, and get ready.
Yeah, we'll eat. Oh. Big week. I can't wait to tee up this tournament.
Yeah.
We have some good guests. It's going to be a lot of fun. We got the game starting Wednesday. It's going to be spectacular.
All right, that was the Fan Pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Have a great night, everyone.